Marketplaces everywhere have a two-sided challenge. You have to both engage your target audience of buyers and find the right sellers who are a good fit for your specific market. It's far from easy, even if what you're selling is as delicious as the food you can order from Uber Eats. Today, we're talking about the challenges of marketing a B2C marketplace. I'm your host, Kara Hogan, and this is The Empowered Marketer. The Empowered Marketer is brought to you by Zayus, the B2C CRM. Zayus recently launched our new and exciting data science-powered marketing assistant, ZAM. To learn how ZAM can help your business, go to zayus.com to learn more. If you've ordered takeout anytime recently, you may have tried Uber Eats, the massively successful offshoot of Uber that delivers food to your door. Jessica Van Rooyen is the regional marketing lead for Uber Eats Canada, and she's tasked with growing the service not only into new markets, but also with new restaurant partners. She previously spent 7 years at Unilever working across personal care and food products before transitioning to Uber Eats. She explained that she's constantly looking for new ways to drive awareness for the brand in new markets. Despite its ubiquity in cities, Uber Eats is still a new category for many consumers, especially as the brand expands into smaller markets across the world. That's why the team at Uber Eats works so hard to help define the benefits of food delivery for their customers through deep personalization and mobile engagement.
So one of the little-known facts that we're super proud of is that Uber Eats actually started in Canada. The very first city launched globally was Toronto in December 2015. When I joined in March 2017, we were only in 3 major markets in Canada and just a handful of cities globally. And now we're almost in 80 markets in Canada, coast to coast. So the scale of growth that comes with working on a business like this is just obviously one of the things that keeps it interesting. My team manages the marketing strategy for Canada, which includes developing co-marketing programs with big and small restaurants, establishing and executing non-restaurant partnerships, and then calendarizing all of our comms and content. And so getting to work with this like really smart, creative, motivated team means that I'm always learning. So that's definitely what's kept it interesting for me. And also just the fact that food delivery is such a new category. And one of our responsibilities is to help people understand the role that food delivery can play in their lives.
Yeah, I feel like food delivery has become just so normal to everyone, where it used to be like a special thing where you get like delivery. And now it's like, oh no, every night of the week, people get delivery to their house.
Literally, I needed to get the job at Uber because of how often I was using the service. Between Uber and Uber Eats, I'm like, I don't even want to know. I'm definitely in the top quartile of customers.
Yeah, and I've definitely gone into restaurants before where there's no one there and they are so busy. And I realize it's because it's all Uber Eats orders. And it's crazy to me. Like, I'll be waiting and like, why is this taking so long? Oh my God, they have like 100 orders coming in and no one's in the restaurant, which is interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's really cool to see a lot of restaurants are actually changing their operations and like, you know, creating separate delivery lines or actually opening new stores because of the volume that they're getting through delivery. So it's really awesome to see, you know, the fundamental changes it's having to the restaurant industry as well.
Super interesting. So what's one of the big marketing challenges you face in terms of offering a service like Uber Eats? I mean, you said, you know, it's super popular, it's really growing fast, but is this a hard audience to market to?
So I think for you and I, because clearly we use the service and it's like very seamlessly integrated in our lives, it's kind of hard to imagine that anyone wouldn't know about us. But one of our biggest marketing challenges is actually driving awareness. That continues to be a priority. If you look at the food delivery category, majority of the orders continue to come in through the phone. So that in of itself is a huge opportunity. And then I think as a nascent category, our challenge is to help define the role of food delivery in people's lives. And that there doesn't need to be this sort of like guilt or special occasion mentality towards it. We're not just Chinese food and pizza. We have tons of healthy options. And, you know, you don't need to feel bad or like lazy about ordering, honestly, it's just like you're optimizing your time, and that will let you reinvest it into the places that matter to you. So sort of bringing people along that journey is what makes the marketing role really exciting.
And so is there a target demographic that you're looking at for expansion right now? So like maybe, you know, your tech savvy, like 20 something is already using Uber Eats, but are you pushing like up in age or in specific areas? Like, what are you looking at?
Well, a little bit of that comes naturally from expansion. So we started in really large cities in core downtown areas, but as we've scaled, you know, we're going into smaller markets and demographics shift. But I think that defining your target market is kind of like a combination of who's already using you, but also what is your competition doing? Who's going to benefit most from like the product that you're offering? So we do a decent amount of segmentation work and look at our own data to understand like, you know, are we winning with college students? We can kind of make some assumptions around the fact that, you know, if you're typically ordering to a campus area or it's typically late night or typically for one, maybe you're a student, but we're also trying to pair that with some third-party data that, you know, we're working with different vendors to understand who are you from a demographic basis. And so from the combination of these two things, we do know that our core audience is those urban millennials and young families. And that just isn't that surprising considered that's where we started. I think what we always think, though, is just because we're targeting them doesn't mean we're just building for them, right? Like, there's lots of opportunities for other audiences to appreciate our service. So it's definitely our target market, but it's not our only market.
And for that market, I mean, what tactics are most effective for reaching them? You know, are you using Instagram ads or, you know, Google ads, or what channels are really working well for you right now?
Well, one of the coolest things about being part of the Uber family means that we can tap into people who are already using Uber. So if you think about the fact that someone who's downloaded the Uber app and is using our rides service, they're probably like highly disposed to wanting to use something like Uber Eats. So that's like a sort of internal audience that we have to convert. But we also really lean heavily into digital channels, knowing that that's where our audience is. You know, we focus on sort of all of the social channels that you mentioned, but we're also starting to investigate and experiment with traditional media, like direct mail or out of home. And throughout all of those experiments is kind of what we call them. We're really making sure that we're testing and learning and building in methodology to understand, like, you know, does out of home work as well as paid digital, and how can we make sure we're optimizing our spend there?
Yeah, I've actually talked to a lot of brands lately who are moving more into traditional media, like, you know, TV ads or, yeah, direct mail, which is interesting. Everything old is new again, always.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, Uber Eats is also a marketplace, which means you have kind of that multi-sided business where you're trying to attract consumers, but you're also working with restaurants. So how do you manage those relationships and, you know, bring in new restaurants to join the platform?
I often joke that I could leave Uber and go market a consumer good that doesn't have a marketplace so easily, because there is so much that goes into thinking about how do we maintain balance across our sides of the marketplace. And maintaining one is really important. Like, we need to grow demand steadily so that supply can grow alongside of it. So we are constantly working with our ops team to make sure that they're always prepared for the upside that could come from any promotion that we're running. And then we also work super closely with our delivery partners as well as our restaurant partners to understand, like, what are the problems that they're having with the service? What are the opportunities that they see so that we can surface those insights to our product teams internally and make sure that we're actually like building something that's working for them. But my team is also, you know, shifting our strategies and thinking more about, to get to the heart of your question, how can we be better at onboarding and facilitating awareness amongst those B2B communities, being our delivery partners and our restaurants. And so paid digital has always been a really strong acquisition channel there for the courier side specifically. So job boards, even social, if it's correctly targeted. And then on the restaurant side, we have a really phenomenal outbound sales team that works to, you know, bring restaurants onto the platform. But we're trying to say as a marketing team, how can we help, you know, increase the amount of inbound that we're getting? And this means experimenting with paid media. We're doing some advertising in trade publications. And right now we're actually working on a trade show strategy. So how do we show up at the right trade shows with the right message, the right collateral, so that we can help restaurant partners understand the value that we can add to their service? Then obviously for restaurant partners, one of the big values of coming onto the Uber Eats platform is discoverability. And the idea that as a marketplace, a lot of people are getting eyes on your restaurant who potentially, you know, wouldn't have known that you exist because you're outside of their core neighborhood. And so the chance to actually just be on the platform, but then, you know, to one up that and actually do co-marketing is a huge selling point for them. And so we make sure that we're picking our, you know, our biggest restaurant partners and the restaurant partners that people really love, and making sure that we're showcasing them on the platform.
Yeah. What kind of co-marketing do you do with restaurants right now? Is there paid opportunities on the app to surface their restaurant first or anything like that?
So one of the things we're really precious about, and I love this, is that the restaurant feed, if you will, is super customized to you. So what you see on the app will reflect obviously the restaurants that deliver in your proximity, but also they're optimized for a number of different metrics that are like your past orders or, you know, what we know to be highly rated restaurants. So we don't really want to interrupt that experience for our audience, but we do have an in-app banner that we sometimes use to surface different promotional opportunities, new restaurants that join the platform, cultural moments or contextual orders. We've just done something around Meatless Monday. So like that, for example, is a really great opportunity to surface our vegan and our vegetarian restaurants and make sure that we're increasing that discoverability. But what's great is obviously all of our tools are super targeted. So we're not going to surface that to someone who's only ever ordered steak on our platform. We know that they're probably not the right audience for Meatless Mondays, but that's just one example of the ways that we try to drive co-marketing with our restaurants.
Yeah. Love Meatless Mondays. I do that myself. So
I'm trying to do it. I'm trying to be better at it. But Meatless Mondays is one example, but we've done Taco Tuesdays and brunch on Sundays. So there's lots of those. And what I really love about that is, to go back to the fact that this is a nascent category, we're helping people define like what are the opportunities for food delivery. Like the fact that you can get meatless restaurants or order brunch is really helping drive adoption of, you know, the potential for food delivery.
You know, you're talking a lot about this engagement within the app. So marketing an app is its own specific challenge. So how do you push people to download the app and encourage usage over time? Do you use any sort of like push notifications or anything like that?
So given we're still a pretty new brand, which is hard to remember sometimes, but we're like, okay, we're just 3 years old and this category is pretty new, it's definitely still really important for us to drive like top of funnel awareness at the same time as driving lower funnel acquisition, recognizing that like we are an app. So we have a really phenomenal performance marketing team, and part of their scope is our always on digital acquisition efforts. And so we're always running paid social, programmatic display, paid search to really capture people and encourage direct download. In terms of push notifications, some companies do violate the Apple App Store guidelines to send push notifications for promotions. At Uber, we do not. But we do use CRM across email and some of those in-app features I was speaking to earlier to make sure that people are aware of our different offers, when new restaurants launch, providing them with inspiration on new ways that they can use the service. And as I mentioned, like personalization is a huge part of that. We want to reflect the way that you're interacting with our service so that when we interrupt your day with a message, it is actually one that is going to drive you to take an action because it feels super relevant to you and it doesn't feel bothersome and annoying.
I've been talking a lot about push notifications because I think they're a great opportunity because they convert at such high rates, but they're also terrifying because if you do them poorly, people will be furious with you and your brand. So it's this fine balance of like, if you do a useful and well done push notification that someone has opted into, it's good.
Yes, exactly.
But there's lots of ifs.
I kind of feel that way about email too. Like if we're going to be in your inbox, which let's be honest, at this point probably has a lot of emails from different brands. You know, how does that subject line feel super relevant and hook you in and, you know, make it worth your effort and isn't just another thing to clog your inbox or something that you just delete without even opening. So that's really important.
Yeah. How do you think about personalizing these emails? Are you using the same analytics that drive personalization within the app?
Yeah. So we do have integrated sort of tools across our different platforms, which does allow us to make sure that whatever we're using on the app side is also reflected on in the app, like in the app's marketing as well as outside of the app. So you shouldn't get an email about Meatless Mondays, just like you shouldn't see it in the app if you're always ordering meat. So we make sure that all those touch points reflect sort of similar targeting criteria.
How do you think about customer loyalty? Do you have campaigns that are specifically encouraging people to buy from their favorite restaurants again, or that they rated this item 5 stars? Like, how do you keep that cycle of engagement going?
So we actually just launched a loyalty product last year in select markets in the US called Uber Rewards. So obviously it has loyalty at the heart. You can earn points on your rides and your Eats orders and then redeem them in different ways across both platforms. But this product isn't yet available in Canada. So we definitely think about loyalty all the time and in a similar way to what you just suggested. We're constantly tracking retention, not only on like an aggregate basis, but also across some of the different segments that we've built out for ourselves around, you know, our actual eater audiences. And we use, you know, that segmentation as well as other factors like trip frequency or basket size to help us determine our customer lifetime value. And so we're always running experiments to improve one of those metrics. So we could know that, you know, you've always ordered dinner, but could we also drive you to order lunch or potentially even breakfast? You know, we could know that you five star rated this restaurant. So how do we let you know when a like restaurant is on the platform so that we're encouraging that discoverability and another opportunity to come back? So we're definitely using the data at our disposal to think about how we can drive loyalty and frequency. And I think the day of the week experiments that I was talking to are just like a great example of how can we encourage usage when you weren't necessarily going to think about Uber Eats.
Yeah, I love the focus on analytics. I would expect nothing less from Uber Eats, but how much of a focus for your role is that data-driven process? Like, is everything that you do focused on that?
100%. We actually have a marketing analyst that sits as part of our team. Obviously, we're looking at data on an aggregate basis, so it's not about, you know, a one-to-one, but he is helping us identify not only reporting, but also like trends. We're constantly setting up experiments and thinking about how can we move the needle on specific metrics and then going back to say, did that work or did it not? So it's definitely at the heart of like everything that we do. And we don't do anything without looking at the data to determine the insight, setting up the program with the right cohort and the right audience, and then bringing that full circle to say, like, you know, did that drive the metrics that we wanted? Are we seeing an increase in orders? Are we seeing an increase in trips per eater who's ordering? We want to see those results not only for ourselves, but also for our partners that we're including in these types of programs.
It's interesting. We just did a whole thing where we talked about the rise of the B2C marketer as this concept of like a renaissance marketer, where you have to be data-driven, you have to be really comfortable with technology, and then you also have to be creative. So you have to have like all of these pieces in order to do your job now today, where, you know, before maybe you could just be creative. You didn't have to have all of these other skills.
Totally. As I mentioned, we do have a marketing analyst on our team that helps us with the deeper dives and analysis, but we are all expected to be comfortable with, pulling the data, writing a degree of queries in SQL, and more importantly, being able to actually interpret it. So even if we can't pull it ourselves, we have to be able to understand, like, what are the trends and patterns that we're seeing? And then you have to be creative enough to think, okay, how do I take those insights and figure out how to build something that's, exciting and relevant to consumers and building my brand?
So I like to wrap up the interview by talking about kind of some personal things a little bit more. So let's talk about failure. What was one time that you failed and what happened and what did you learn from it?
I will tell you a specific failure story because I definitely have them, but I do think that one of the things that I love about the team that I'm on is we actually fail every day. There are a lot of things that make it really easy for us to embrace failure and feel empowered to do so. It's part of our company culture. We're encouraged to take big, bold bets as long as you're like learning from the results and then iterating and evolving. And because we have access to all of these tools and all of the data, we can build out really strong like A/B tests and measure our results right away. So our analysts will help us with that, but we all have this base level understanding to say like, did this work? And then something that's been so exciting for me coming to a, obviously digital platform versus a consumer goods company is that we are digital at the heart. So our lead times are a lot shorter. You know, providing engineering resources are not required. We can have an idea on Monday, execute it on Tuesday, learn if it worked on Wednesday, and then roll it out or tweak it on Thursday versus a consumer goods company where at best, there's a couple of months to bring up a new product and launch it. And then, you need some time to understand if it's working. So all of those factors have made it really easy to embrace failure on a day-to-day basis. But to share a specific example.
I love a story.
early on in my career, I worked on a very expensive custom Facebook app. I don't know if you remember when getting likes on your Facebook page was like the biggest thing in social media. But this was back when Facebook was still like considered an organic channel. We created this standalone app on our Facebook page that encouraged people to like ultimately take a photo and like write some content on it and share it. It was not very good and it was super expensive and literally no one used it. And there are like four major things I learned from it. The first was build it and they will come is not a thing. You can't just have like a little side conversation and expect people to care about it and like invest all this money in production if you don't have a big media plan to let people know. So that's definitely a learning that I've taken throughout my career is like, if you're going to do something cool, make sure you're building in equal, if not more, to let people know about it. The best ideas are simple. This was definitely not the simplest idea. And even explaining it internally, it was so much effort. So I think that's something actually Uber is so fantastic at is our ideas are really simple. Like everyone remembers puppies, ice cream day, like tap the app and you can just get those things. The third thing I think I took out of that was just because something is new doesn't mean that it's right for you. Like, don't hop on the bandwagon just because it's there. I think we were like, oh, like we're a young brand and like social media is so important. Like we need to build this app, but like it wasn't necessarily super relevant for us. And just make sure you have a really strong brief. I don't think we could go back and say, was it right? Because our brief probably wasn't as strong as it needed to be. And that's probably why we didn't get great work out of our creative partners. So it was a very expensive, very niche thing. And I try to apply the learnings from that in everything else that I've had the pleasure of being able to work on.
Yeah, that's a great story. I've been involved in a really similar project of building. I worked on a like custom magazine that was all digital and it had to have its own app. And it was like, why do we have to have an app for this? This is a terrible, terrible idea.
I feel like there was this period though, where it was like everyone, we also built an app by the way, but I feel like it was like when apps were just coming out, it was like, whoa, we all need an app. And then yes. I was like, nobody wants to download your app.
Exactly. No, yes. That's so true. It was, everybody was like, we're building a custom app, even though it's going to cost so much money and then no one will use it, but we hadn't all figured it out yet.
Yeah, exactly.
The other thing I like to ask people about is looking towards the future. What do you think is going to be big coming up and in really going to shape the future for B2C businesses. It could be tech, it could be, you know, just a trend that you're noticing, whatever you think is going to be interesting for people.
The story I just told you about my failed Facebook app, I don't even know if that's what it's called, but I think that's what they're called. That's what they were called. But I feel like, you know, that's a good example of showing how I've been really lucky in my career to see the evolution of digital and social, like them become a thing. Like I think when I was first starting, it was kind of like this big standalone effort. You had people who were like, I'm just a digital manager. I'm just, you know, you had a digital or social strategy. The change that I've seen is now those are just like other channels that you use as part of your full marketing mix. And they're like pretty integral. Like you're not thinking about them in isolation. And then I've also noticed, like, I've had the pleasure of working at an amazing, you know, traditional marketing company that has really strong, purposeful, brand-led organization. But we were always struggling to think about, like, how do we bring that online? Like, oh my God, we have to sell on Amazon now. Or like, oh, we have never collected emails. Like, how do we sell, you know, how do we get people to sign up for our e-newsletter? And one of the things I learned at Uber was just how important it is to have this always on acquisition marketing effort. You know, it's not an afterthought. Paid search is like a foundation. Then I've got to come to Uber and see tech companies like Uber, who've always had really strong product market fit, but haven't necessarily had to think about brand in the same way. Now I'm feeling really privileged to work at a company that is thinking about brand building in a really important way. So I can tap into my experience from my old life and bring that here. What I think is really coming in terms of trends for the future is the brands that are going to be like the next big brands of tomorrow are the ones who can do both. The ones who can build really powerful brand purpose and create brands that really resonate with people, but also unlock the power of tech to get there and are able to do both. And I think we're just at the beginning of that. We obviously have like the huge brands that we all grew up with and know. And then we have all these tech companies that are growing really quickly. And I think in 10, 20, 30, 40 years from now, the brands we're going to be talking about are really going to have mastered both the tech element as well as the brand purpose element. So I'm excited to be at a company that I think is really embracing that journey.
If you'd like to learn more about Uber Eats, follow UberEats_Canada on all social media platforms. Thanks for listening, everyone. I'd love to hear your feedback as always. And if possible, you can always rate and review the podcast on your favorite platform. That helps us a ton because it helps get the word out about the show and tell people how much you like it. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you lovely humans again in 2 weeks.